Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. From the very beginning, the Trump administration has pushed hard to roll back environmental regulations. So far, more than 90 environmental rules have been gutted, including clean water rules and bans on pesticides. Well, this push is continuing amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Today's guests report that the administration is busy dismantling Obama-era auto fuel economy standards, approving new pipelines and mining projects, and issuing waivers allowing a private company to take over inspection duties at Tyson Foods beef slaughterhouses. Tyson Foods is the biggest U.S. meat processor in the country. On today's Your Call, we will spend the hour looking at the long list of changes to environmental and health and safety regulations at a time when we're fighting one of the worst public health crises in recent memory. Today, we're joined by Rebecca Lieber, a reporter for Mother Jones DC Bureau, where she covers environmental politics and policy. Rebecca has covered climate and energy for more than 24 media outlets, and she joins us from Washington, DC. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us. We're also joined by Chris D'Angelo. Chris is an environment reporter at HuffPost. He's also based in D.C., where he covers public lands, climate change, biodiversity, and environmental policies. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to have both of you. In fact, we've been talking about spending time on every couple days to really look at what's happening behind the scenes that is not directly related to COVID-19, and environmental laws are so, so important. So I just wonder, as all of our attention is really focused on COVID-19, how are you both really keeping track of what the administration is doing when it comes to environmental laws and regulations? Rebecca, why don't you start?
Well, there's obviously lots going on right now. I guess it helps that we've been tracking this for years now, that what we're seeing now in the third, possibly final year of the Trump administration is a race to the finish with rolling back regulations. So what we're seeing now, the EPA do here in the middle of a pandemic, is a continuation of this longer-term deregulatory agenda. So we're just getting to the final stages where the EPA can release the final steps of these rules that reverse the Obama legacy. So it's important to remember, while a lot of this can feel new, this has been in the works for years, and there are many steps in this process.
Chris, what would you add?
I think Rebecca covered a lot of it there. As far as keeping track of it, myself and my colleague Alex Kaufman have sort of pieced together a list that is, you know, being updated by the day to keep track of some of this stuff. And I agree. I mean, I think that this is, you know, this is all of the stuff that they would like to see done before the November election.
Can you also both talk about what's happening behind the scenes in terms of lobbying? Because we know that the oil and gas industry has, you know, major interests and lobby groups, same with big ag. Rebecca, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so one of the major lobby groups for the oil industry is called American Petroleum Institute. Now, the timing of this has been really interesting if we take one rule, or the EPA's recent announcement to suspend enforcement that I know we're going to get into more detail there. But API had days before when oil prices began crashing, they told reporters on a press call that they were not in conversation with the Trump administration about release. Now we know that that was either not true or these conversations were about to take off, because days later, API sent a letter to the administration requesting release from certain EPA enforcement. What the EPA responded with days after was an even broader suspension of its rules and enforcement that went above and beyond what the oil industry had requested. Now we're seeing API extend that influence to the other agencies as well, where it is asking for relief from royalty fees on its drilling on public land. So the trade groups here, the lobby groups, tend to, they're the heavyweights here that are asking the administration for certain steps that the Trump administration has been all certainly willing to go along with what the agenda that API has been setting.
Chris, what can you tell us about lobbyists and corporate interest groups that are working behind the scenes? And we should also say we've done a lot of shows about how people who, you know, were in charge of various companies are now working with the Trump administration. So what can you tell us about what's happening behind the scenes?
I guess what I would add to that is, one piece that we wrote this week was specifically about a lobbying firm based out of Denver, a law and lobbying firm who represents several oil and gas interests here in the U.S., but has also been a lobbyist for Saudi Arabia for the last several years. And, they've collected something like $4 million since late 2016. There's an interesting dynamic there, right? Like you have, lobbyists representing a nation that has, launched a price war that is severely impacting local oil and gas producers here, representing both sides of that. And on the royalties thing, I think what else is interesting is you've seen a lot of members of Congress sign on to letters calling for the administration to do just that, to cut or reduce or waive royalties amid this pandemic. Those lawmakers have taken large sums of fossil fuel money over their careers. So I don't know where the royalty thing ends up, but it'll be interesting to watch.
All right. Well, I just wanted to test that, and it's still happening on our end. So we'll try to fix that. That is Chris D'Angelo, an environment reporter at HuffPost. We're also joined by Rebecca Lieber, a reporter with Mother Jones. And today we are talking about what is happening behind the scenes. The Trump administration is still pushing hard to roll back environmental regulations as all of our attention is on the COVID-19 pandemic. If you have any questions for our guests, we're going to talk about the EPA. We will talk about some other things that Chris found when it comes to pipelines, mining projects, and slaughterhouses. And then in the second half of the show, we will specifically focus on the administration dismantling Obama-era auto fuel economy standards. So if you have any questions, thoughts, concerns about this, give us a call, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Rebecca, you were talking about what's going on at the EPA. In one of your latest pieces for Mother Jones, you write that the EPA is ceding its federal authority to state offices and deferring to the polluters, even on issues that could pose an imminent threat to public health or the environment. Can you tell us what this means exactly?
So some of the weeks are blending together. I believe it was last week that the EPA announced in a letter that it was suspending pretty broad amount of environmental law in stopping civil penalties for polluters and suspending a lot of the day-to-day collection of data like pollution from facilities. Now, this is a really broad letter that's backdated to March 13th, telling telling facilities that it normally regulates that if they can prove COVID-19 prevented it from fulfilling these requirements, that there would be no penalty. And this caused quite a lot of controversy, especially among former EPA staff. There were all kinds of statements from staff, including former EPA administrator Gina McCarthy, saying that this is an open license to pollute, and questioning why the EPA has quite such broad language in a way that almost signals to the industry that permission. And the thing is, as we know with COVID-19, that affects the lungs. Pollution is one of the top factors of what can make people susceptible to respiratory illness. And there's quite a lot of data on this, showing the connections of pollution's effects on the lungs. So there's a very close connection here to what the EPA is doing and the impact on public health.
Have you heard from any companies that plan to, what's the right word here, embrace this new policy? Because the EPA is basically telling companies it's okay to be non-compliant because of the pandemic, right?
Right. I think there's some legitimacy to the challenges we have here. Of course, companies also are facing the reality of workers getting ill, needing to use a different kind of plan in a pandemic. However, I think what this does, it's preemptory. So you have the EPA saying it's okay if you pollute going forward. So what we're going to see here, and this is where environmental enforcement becomes so hard to talk about, because we're talking about impacts that have not yet happened or that we don't know about. So the EPA is pulling back on inspections and enforcement. That means sending staff, federal officials, to inspect sites, and also letting oil companies back off their own monitoring. So we don't even know the full extent of impacts here. I think we have plenty of examples of what this could look like and what will happen here. We see this with already in the West and Midwest, when with the proliferation of oil and gas drilling, that these wells are already, they're not monitored very closely, that federal oversight is already at too little stretched too thinly to really keep an eye on the methane emissions that come out from these wells and the water pollution as well. So I think those kind of give us a glimpse of what could happen. And I think it's going to be a long time before we know the full extent of impacts here.
And Rebecca, as a reporter who closely covers this, how do you go about finding that information?
Right. Well, we're not in normal times. This is really, I think, to be honest, there are challenges as a reporter in a pandemic of getting the story. I think normally, it's very important to rely on federal data and EPA collection of data. That's one resource. In other cases, it's talking to people in communities that are impacted. But when I've been making calls, and normally we would also be doing reporting trips to see this and talk to people in person, but I've been doing some calls lately with sources, environmentalists, the people who have been the watchdogs here, and they also have had to pull back on their plans just because travel is not advised right now and logistically impossible. So environmentalists who normally are also monitoring these sites, especially in underserved communities, they've also had to change their plans. So I mean, Chris has also been following this really closely. So I think there's some added challenges to ensuring accountability in a pandemic.
Chris, what would you add?
I would agree. I think that a lot of environmental groups are kind of finding how to move forward with their own work, with many people working from home and just changes to their structure as a whole. And then just to back up to the enforcement side of things, I mean, I think we're already seeing this become, you know, seeing states take similar action to the action that EPA has taken. For example, last week, Alaska regulators announced that they would be more lenient on air and water quality enforcement, and essentially allow companies to report violations voluntarily. And again, I mean, I don't think we'll know the impact of those sorts of decisions for weeks or months.
Chris, you also wrote about a couple of other policies that the Trump administration is implementing. What can you tell us about approving new pipelines and mining projects?
Yes, I mean, these are things that have really flown much more under the radar, I think, than you know, the news about enforcement leniency and some of the so-called secret science rule stuff. You know, I mean, so far we've heard about you know, they're moving forward with offshore and onshore oil and gas leases. There was an auction, I think, 2 weeks ago now. Feels like much longer than that, but they offered up 78 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico, ended up leasing off way lower than that, and you know, there's Interior approved an expansion of an oil and silver mine, or I mean a gold and silver mine in Arizona. There have been at least one or two other auctions announced, I believe, in New Mexico and Texas. And then, you know, there's stuff that's not necessarily policy rollbacks as well. I mean, we've seen sort of public comment periods proceed despite calls for those to be, you know, lengthened because people needed more time to get through some of this stuff. Those included a rollback to migratory bird protections. There's another one moving forward on the National Environmental Policy Act. So, I mean, there's really just a growing list of, you know, the ways that the Trump administration is advancing its environmental agenda.
We've reported on this before, but can you also tell us about what the U.S. Department of Agriculture is doing? You report that they confirmed a waiver allowing a private company to take over inspection duties at a Tyson Foods beef slaughterhouse.
Yeah, so that was in that was at Tyson's Kansas facility, and you know, the a beef slaughterhouse in Holcomb, Kansas, and you know, a USDA spokesperson at the time, I guess this was last week, said it was just part of an effort to modernize its beef slaughter inspection system, and you know, obviously food advocacy groups see things quite differently, so you know, again, it's just it's one of numerous things that are getting very little media attention with everyone focused on pandemic and the response.
And we've asked reporters in the past about this, but with all of these major changes, just the ones that we're talking about this morning, if a Democrat wins in November, Chris, why don't you start? How hard will it be to change things, to put them back to where they were, let's say, a year or two ago?
I mean, I my colleague Alex has written about, you know, sort of exploring that very question. And I think there are people that would tell you some of the stuff that's happening in EPA could take years, maybe decades. I don't know. You know, I think it depends on the specific rollback. But yeah, I mean, there's no question that some of this stuff can't be reversed on day one of a new Democratic administration.
Rebecca, what would you add?
Yeah, I remember talking about this before on the show, and I think, it, like Chris said, it can depend on what the action is, but a couple other things to remember. I think it's a lot harder than people are bargaining for to put things back on track or back together again if a Democrat took over. That's because one is regulations are a multi-step, multi-year process. So it's not as simple as signing the Obama orders back and reversing Trump, because EPA would have to update analyses. It has to issue drafts and justifications for the reversal. And the Trump administration recognizes how hard that is, because they are racing against the deadline that happens in late May, when the when Congress, basically, the Congressional Review Act kicks in, where any rule that's finalized in the final months of the administration could be reversed through a simple majority in Congress. And the Trump administration, of course, wouldn't want that their rules to be easily reversed. So they are racing to finish as many rules as possible before that May deadline. And, of course, this was a tool that was also used to reverse Obama rules. So that's one key factor here of what makes it harder to reverse the gap in EPA regulation and enforcement. And the second that I've brought up before is just the sheer amount of brain drain that the EPA has experienced, and attacks on how science functions at the EPA. Now, this will take time to put back together again, just because they have seen major gaps in appointments. The Trump administration has successfully rehauled the science advisory boards that advise a lot of the EPA's work and are very important. They've refashioned them for some more sympathetic views to industry arguments. So all this is such a it's a long process. I wish I had a more positive kind of spin of how this could be changed on day one, but I think it will take some time.
And Chris, Rebecca talked about the on-the-ground consequences of these changes. I mean, we've done a lot of shows about pollution. You both have written about this. What are some of the other real-life changes that we will see as a result of these rollbacks and rule changes?
Well, I mean, I think that in some cases we're already seeing it. And this is actually a perfect example of the administration trying to codify changes before an election, is their rollback of migratory bird protections, which started with a legal opinion from the solicitor at the Interior Department, essentially ruling that any incidental or accidental bird deaths resulting from industry activity, be it windmills or oil infrastructure, those deaths would no longer be subject to potential prosecution. They're now working to put that into regulation. Already, we've seen the enforcement and investigation of bird deaths, basically come to a halt. They're not going out and looking at why birds die, unless there's, very real evidence that somebody killed those animals intentionally. There's a lot of examples already where we're seeing them basically say, well, look, we're operating under this new legal opinion. We can't go, poking around on this. As far as on the ground, I think we're already getting glimpses of this, and I'm sure we're going to see more of that in the coming months.
One question before we let you both go from John. He says, are there ways to make rules permanent so they cannot be reversed in the future after Trump leaves? Rebecca?
Sorry, could you repeat the question? I couldn't
sure.
hear that.
Are there ways to make rules permanent so they cannot be reversed in the future after Trump leaves?
Now, interesting. I've never been asked that, but I don't think how regulations work, because the EPA is required by law to have their rules reflect the best available science and economics, and those, that situation is constantly changing. But I think that what is permanent, unless Congress were to pass another law, is the Clean Air and Clean Water Act, and those give EPA very strong authorities to regulate pollution, to enforce the law, and that's been environmentalists' strongest tool throughout the Trump administration in challenging these rollbacks. So it's unlikely Congress is about to revisit these acts anytime soon. So it continues to be their strongest tool in making, and it will. We'll see a Democrat coming in. Depending on the level of ambition, that law could be stretched very far to ensure environmental protection.
Well, thank you for that important question, John. And thank you so much for joining us. Rebecca Lieber is a reporter in Mother Jones' D.C. Bureau, where she covers environmental politics and policy. Rebecca, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Chris D'Angelo is an environment reporter at HuffPost, where he covers public lands, climate change, biodiversity, and environmental policy. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And coming up after a quick break, we will discuss the Trump administration's decision to weaken Obama-era auto emission standards, which environmental groups and experts call a massive blow in the fight against the climate crisis. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Last week, the Trump administration announced changes to Obama-era automobile fuel efficiency standards, which will allow vehicles to emit about a billion more tons of carbon dioxide, equivalent to roughly a fifth of annual U.S. emissions. Today's guest, Dr. Dave Cook, says we are in the middle of a public health crisis that is devastating, and the administration is finalizing a rule that will undermine both public health and the economy. If that isn't some of the most backwards nonsense ever, I don't know what is. Dr. Dave Cook is senior vehicles analyst in the Clean Vehicles Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Dr. Cook specializes in light and heavy duty fuel economy and conducts research on fuel efficiency technologies and the implications for oil consumption and greenhouse gas emissions across the transportation sector. Hi, Dr. Cook. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to ask you a quick question about our first segment. We spoke with reporters Rebecca Lieber and Chris D'Angelo about the Trump administration continuing to roll back environmental laws as most of us are focused on the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, we're talking about approving new pipelines and mining projects, issuing waivers, allowing a company to take over inspection duties at a Tyson Foods beef slaughterhouse. Dr. Cook, what can citizens do about this, especially now that, you know, it's just not getting the media attention it would have gotten before the pandemic?
Well, I think, yeah, that's a great point. And I think one of the things that we've raised, so one of the issues that we have concerns over are things like, you know, public hearings are obvious on a lot of these proposals are not going to be held right now. And yeah, you continue to see the administration move forward with its, you know, quote unquote, deregulatory agenda. Luckily, there are some options to respond to some of these proposals through written public comments and online fora. So that's still available. Your congressional representatives still hold the ability to hold the administration accountable and dig into the administration's record and ask those probing questions and get those critical answers. So contacting the people who in Congress and in the Senate who represent you is another key strategy that citizens can take.
What concerns you the most, given that the administration is continuing rolling back these laws and rules?
Well, one of the things that I think is most important to recognize about the administration's approach is that they have been they don't have facts and science on their side. And so as a lot of these processes have wound their way into the courts and really looked at, dug into the records, they've had a lot of losses. They've had to go back to the drawing board. And that's what we've seen with the Clean Car proposal and now final rule two, is that they really had to go back to the drawing board and start from scratch because their analysis was completely shoddy. And what we've seen is that the final rule itself is just as bad as it was before. So, I think I don't want to say people should take heart that the administration is, moving forward with rules that aren't based in science and facts, but because science and facts are on the side of those opposing the administration's actions, there's a lot of opportunity for that to win out in the end.
And is it true that they are cutting back the public comment period from 60 days to 30 days?
About the car rules in particular,
the EPA in general, because usually when they make a change, they say the public can comment. Do you know if they cut that back, that time period back?
Generally, I don't know for certain. Generally, the rule, different rules have different lengths of comment periods. And in fact, they actually recently extended, thankfully, a comment period that we were focused on regarding, at the fundamental level, how EPA considers science in its rulemakings. And so they extended that comment period amidst the pandemic. So I'm not aware of any carte blanche policy.
Okay. Now, before we dive in and talk about the Trump administration rolling back Obama-era emission standards, can you first give us some background about these standards and why they are so important when it comes to lowering greenhouse gas emissions?
Sure. When these standards were first finalized under President Obama, they were slated to cut in half emissions, CO2 emissions from new vehicles, and that's really critical because cars stay on the road for decades, and so they were slated to have emissions of new cars from between 2012 to 2025. And frankly, we were hoping to continue that progress forward as well, because as we approach, as we look forward to 2050, vehicles that are purchased in, 2020, 2025 are still going to be on the road in 2050. And so it's really important that we address those emissions of new vehicles now, because it takes so long to transition the vehicle fleet to these more efficient options. And the program has been working. To date, consumers have saved just over $100 billion in gas as a result of these more efficient cars. So this is a program that has been working. Manufacturers are complying with the program. We're at the highest level of fuel economy ever. And it's important that we progress as quickly as possible because of this long-term challenge on the climate.
So these new rules were announced back in 2012, and they required average fuel mileage to reach 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025, a target that would have tailpipe emissions reduce oil consumption by 12 billion barrels and save drivers between $3,200 and $5,700 in gas costs over a vehicle's lifetime. So, Dr. Cook, talk about the significance of these changes.
Well, so, as I said, we are at you know, we are at the highest levels of fuel economy we've ever been, and the current rules were slated to continue that progress in, you know, all vehicles, whether, you know, we have the most efficient pickup trucks we've ever had, most efficient SUVs, et cetera. The Trump administration's rule, so we are slated to improve fuel efficiency by 5% per year through 2025. And back in the 2018, the Trump administration had proposed freezing fuel economy standards at 2020 levels. So, you know, not requiring any more improvement from manufacturers through 2026. They have slightly changed that. So they are now requiring 1.5% per year improvements from 2021 through 2026. But that's obviously well short of the 5% per year improvement we were required, you know, we have been benefiting from. And frankly, their own analysis shows that there's basically no difference between the 1.5% per year that they finalized and the rule that they proposed a year and a half ago. And both fall well short of what the industry can do and what we must do.
And the move by the Trump administration has been widely condemned by environmentalists and organizations like yours, the Union of Concerned Scientists. Daniel Becker, director of the nonprofit Safe Climate Campaign Center for Auto Safety, told the HuffPost that of all the bad things Trump has done on the environment, this is the worst. So to tell us about the long-term ramifications of this.
Yeah, sure. This the clean car standards are the biggest single policy in effect to address climate change. And you know, you mentioned at the start of the program, nearly a billion tons of additional carbon dioxide are going to result from this rule. You're talking about, you know, 2 billion barrels of additional oil. And that costs not just the environment, but it also costs consumers. So the administration's own analysis says that the average new car buyer is going to be $700 worse off that as a result of their rule. I don't know many people who are like, yeah, great, take $700 from me so I can drive a less efficient vehicle, pay more in gas, pollute more and for the environment. This is just a terrible deal for consumers. It's a terrible deal for the economy. The administration's own numbers say that they'll lose 20,000 jobs in the auto sector alone. It's really just an all-around terrible deal, and you know the administration has pushed it through anyway.
Last year, California and 24 other states sued the EPA and the Transportation Department because it prevents them from setting stricter emission limits. I'm sorry, California and 24 organizations. Do you know what is the status of that lawsuit? What happened to it?
That lawsuit continues to work its way through the legal system. You know, California has a longstanding leadership role when it comes to vehicle emissions controls. And as a result of that strong leadership, the Clean Air Act actually specially recognizes California's authority and allows other states, so allows California to set stronger rules than the federal government, and it allows any state to adopt those rules. And so, you know, California has continued to exercise that authority, and we around the country have benefited from that strong leadership. The lawsuit came about in the fall because the Trump administration revoked California's ability to set greenhouse gas emission standards. And, you know, that continues to work its way through the system. It's an in-process thing. And unfortunately, it's made the need for that strong state leadership is even clearer when you look at the current, you know, when you look at the rule that was finalized by the administration. Clearly, the feds are not going far enough. We need that strong state support to go further.
What do you think, how far do you think states will take this? Because California, Massachusetts, and other groups say that they're going to sue the government over these changes. How far can they take this?
So because we are also involved in this lawsuit, I hesitate to say exactly how far it can go. I mean, the states and other groups are prepared to fight as much as possible in order to prevent the administration from attacking the environment and its proposals in any way possible. And so, you know, we will use the tools that we have in front of us, and that includes the legal system.
Today, we are talking about the Trump administration's plans to dismantle Obama-era auto fuel economy standards. And right now, we are joined by Dr. Dave Cook, Senior Vehicles Analyst in the Clean Vehicles Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And if you have any questions or comments about this, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. The administration just confirmed their plan, finalized their plan on these rollbacks a couple of days ago. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Dr. Cook, who's really pushing for this? Because late last year, I mean, the Wall Street Journal and their op-ed page is pretty conservative. They had an op-ed that said car companies want stricter emission standards. What's the problem? The Trump administration lets ideology get in the way of a win-win. And the op-ed said the administration's fight with automakers over clear standards is unnecessary. So who's pushing for this? Is it the oil companies?
Well, at the start of the process, the auto companies absolutely pushed the administration to reopen these standards. They have pushed at every turn for weaker standards. I think what they underestimated was just how far the administration would go and just how much chaos it would rain on the industry. And so what you've seen recently is a split in the industry. And so Ford, Honda, BMW, Volkswagen, and now Volvo have been working with California towards an agreement that would continue to ratchet up and provide stronger emission standards than what the federal program would do, because they recognize the strong leadership role that California plays. On the other hand, you have automakers like General Motors and Toyota and Fiat Chrysler who are supporting the administration's actions to take away that authority and have left us with this extremely weak proposal. But at the end of the day, you know, the biggest the real only beneficiaries of the federal government's action are the oil and gas, are the fossil fuel industry. So the amount of additional oil that we're going to burn is considerable as a result of this policy, and it seems like they are the ones who are really driving the boat on this.
So let me just repeat that: GM, General Motors, Toyota, and Fiat Chrysler, they essentially agree with the Trump administration rolling back the Obama era policy. Is that right?
Yeah, and they have not publicly supported the administration's proposal, but what they have done is publicly attacked California's role driving this forward. And they have not sided, as other automakers have, with the stronger emission standards that California and other states have put forward. So, And it's, yeah, so it's a mixed bag at exactly how they've proposed this and exactly how they've responded. But GM, Chrysler, and Toyota, among others, have been clear that they are willing to let the administration run the show. And in this case, that has resulted in a massive rollback of efficiency standards.
All right. And then Ford, Honda, BMW, Volkswagen, and Volvo say that they will work with states like California.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Is there a place where people can go to find this information?
I blogged about the California Air Resources Board has been pretty public with its announcements about this deal, this agreement that they worked out with Honda, Volkswagen, BMW, and Ford last year. Mm-hmm. Over the summer, and Volvo, they made an announcement actually last week, coinciding with the administration's actions.
Okay. And I know that the lawsuits are continuing, but do you think that there is a possibility that the federal government can force California to abandon its policy?
Yeah, I can't comment on ongoing legal matters. Sorry.
Right. No, that's okay. We'll definitely continue to follow this. Let's take a caller before we end. Let's hear from Max in Berkeley. Hi, Max. Welcome to the show.
Hello, yes.
Oh, hi, Max.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call, and it's a very good program. I have a simple question. It seems to me that as producers of cars in this country, we are in competition with the Japanese, with the Germans, the French, and perhaps the Chinese also. They produce cars manufactured in China by American companies. Is this going to hurt the competitive position of the cars that we produce in this country compared to cars produced elsewhere? That's my question.
Thank you, Max. So nice to hear your voice. Hope you're hanging in there.
Thank you very much. Well, these are challenging times, but we are hanging in there. By the way, I'm taking a whole look at what's happening in Haiti with that crisis.
Oh, thank you, Max. We will add that to our growing list. Thank you. Dr. Cook?
Yeah, that's a great point. And unfortunately, it will negatively impact, American leadership in the automotive industry, the role that the U.S. plays nationwide. And that affects the types of investments and the types of jobs that are created in this industry, right? If other countries are setting stronger standards, and I'm a supplier with an innovative technology, I look at where that technology is going to result in increased sales. And I'm gonna invest in new facilities outside the U.S. if we're not moving the country forward. And so, while it's a global industry, and we are missing out on an opportunity to move the nation forward.
And can we end with the same question I asked our last guests? Can you talk about the on-the-ground effects of this? I mean, we know what it's going to do when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. What will this do to public health? We've done a lot of shows about deaths related directly to air pollution.
Yeah, and the administration's own analysis shows that they expect up to 1,400 people to die as a result of the increased emissions related to the refining and transportation of gasoline due to the additional consumption of this rule. And frankly, that's a lowball estimate. We have other groups who've looked at this and have come away with significantly higher numbers, up to 18,000 deaths resulting from the additional pollution created by this rule. It's a tragedy that the administration is moving forward with such a proposal, or with finalizing this rule, given the public health crisis that we're in now.
such a tragedy. Dr. Cook, is that 18,000 people a year?
No, that's total premature premature mortalities.
Okay, total premature mortality. Well, thank you, Dr. Cook. Is there anything else you'd like to add that is under the radar, given that most of our attention is focused on COVID-19? If not, it's okay. No,
we are rightly focused on the crisis in front of us. I think we also need to recognize that as we recover from it, we need to be investing in the crisis around the corner, which is climate change.
Right. Well, Dr. Cook, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Dr. Dave Cook is Senior Vehicles Analyst in the Clean Vehicles Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And we have been talking about the Trump administration's decision to weaken Obama-era auto emission standards, which environmental groups and experts call a massive blow in the fight against the climate crisis. You can find more information about all of the topics we discussed at yourcallradio.org. And we decided that we're going to keep an eye on things that are happening that are not related to COVID-19, might be indirectly related, but there's a lot going on that we're not paying attention to. So if you find any news or information that you think we should talk about, please email us, yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show, and thanks to Kevin Vance and Damian Miner for line producing. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.